Well, you're a true Unitarian Universalist bunch. You're never shy or short of questions from what I've got here. So the collections being taken, I tried to arrange them in some kind of grouping according to categories and things such as that. I was somewhat successful, and I'll see how we do here about the next 20 minutes or so. Like I said earlier, if I don't get to all of them now, there are some that are pretty intriguing. There are some that have a whole sermon within them, and I think I would use it for that purpose. I'll deal with a couple of the fun ones first, or if somebody was trying to tease me. If Kerouac offered you a ride today, would you accept? Probably not. May not know this, but he didn't drive very much at all. The guy who sort of celebrated the open road and freedom on the highways and all that was, by all accounts, a very poor driver, and always was content to have someone else do the driving instead. If I were to catch him at the latter part of his life, I wouldn't want to be in a car with him, because his life pretty well, unfortunately, very tragically, kind of slipped out of control. People who I've spoken with who knew him in the latter stages of his life when he came back to Lowell did say that he wanted to, it's kind of a tragic statement, actually, said if you wanted to have a conversation with him, you had to catch it pretty early in the morning before his drinking kind of overtook him. So I would love to have had some conversations with him, and I would have had to have caught him in the morning. So no, I probably wouldn't want to ride around in a car with him, but I would love to have, if I could have caught him in some clear and lucid moments at the towards the end of his life, I would have loved to have had some conversations with him. And then there was, who do you think would win a USC-Ohio State matchup? And I'm trying to read the rest of this here. Okay. I don't know. Ohio State looked pretty tough the last time around. You probably wrote that book, Steve, or you're Michigan? Yeah. I don't know. This is one of those things where, my heart would be with, I'm sorry, USC, not Michigan. All right, USC. Now, much as I like Pete Carroll, I'd have to give that one to Ohio State. Besides, I have a brother-in-law who's Ohio State grad. So, several of these, maybe I can touch on what's on the back of these. I had several questions kind of around the theme of Unitarian Universalism and Christianity. They seem to come up from time to time. Is or has the UUA moved towards a more Christian stance in the years that you've been a UU minister? How do I feel about it? What do Unitarian Universalists, mostly about how they feel about Jesus? This is kind of an interesting question in a lot of ways. As most of you know, Unitarians and the Universalists in this country, well, anywhere, they had their origins as a protest against some of the more, they were originally a protest against Calvinist Christianity, but they were not a protest against Christianity itself. What they, both the Unitarians and the Universalists, initially sought to do was to offer an alternative way of being a Christian without accepting such doctrines as original sin, the idea that you're all born into a sort of a depraved state, and the doctrine of the elect, which meant that God had already chosen from the beginning of time who would be saved from this state of eternal damnation and who would not. Now, the Unitarians and the Universalists, they could not find any scriptural basis for that. So they considered themselves Christians, but they rejected those two, what were in their way, central tenets of Christianity. And they based their Christianity more on the idea that Jesus came to earth in order to show us how to live more godly lives, I guess you could put it, came to call us from our better selves and away from our more broken and fallen selves. Just because the Unitarians and Universalists, they rejected the idea of original sin, that didn't mean they thought that we were always great and wonderful people. They realized human beings had a capacity to do some pretty terrible, horrible things to themselves, to one another, to the earth. They just didn't believe it was an inherited condition. Now, the question is, are we moving towards a more Christian stance? What I'm seeing going on, I think the Unitarian Universalist movement after a very intensely sort of humanistic period during the 60s, 70s, and up into the early 80s, I think it's looking to sort of reappreciate its Christian origins without going back to the way Unitarianism, Universalism was in the 19th and early 20th century. So that's pretty much what I see happening. Is, like I said, it's kind of a revisiting sort of the liberal Christian origins of Unitarian Universalism without letting go of the idea that we have evolved into a free religion now, where people have to sort of follow their own path, find their own and find their own truth, and we try to offer a community that does that. So I'd say Christianity, liberal Christianity, by that I mean seeking to follow the teachings and the example of Jesus as the moral guide for an earthly life. I would say that is beginning to get a little more, that's gotten a little more attention in recent years than it was when I first came into the EU ministry. I was originally American Baptist. I became a Unitarian Universalist minister in 1978. I'd say at that time, it wasn't that our Christian heritage was being dismissed, but it was very much being played down. So I'm saying there's kind of a reappreciation of that. But I don't think you still would not characterize Unitarian Universalists as a liberal Christian denomination in the way, say, the United Church of Christ, the United Methodist, or some of the more liberal Protestant bodies. We still maintain our free religion approach. I think we've become a little more Christian friendly in recent years. And that kind of got into some other questions. What do I believe to be the central elements that bind us together as you use? And somebody asked, what's my elevator speech there? Side comment on that for a minute. I always found the term elevator speech kind of interesting. I mean, I understand the concept. It's how you say something in the time it takes an elevator to go from one floor to another. And the way it usually gets set up is if you stepped onto an elevator and somebody asked you about your religion, what would you say? Well, by the time the elevator got to the top floor, I've probably ridden elevators thousands of times. Nobody has ever asked me what my religion is when I step into an elevator. But I appreciate the metaphor. Anyway, I say our Unitarian Universalist congregations, I said we are free religious communities. Our heritage is in the liberal Christian faith. But we now try to offer a place where people can support one another in their journeys of meaning and their journeys of spirit. We try to offer a spiritual home for people of a variety of beliefs, where they can grow and discover and try out those beliefs. That probably gets the elevator to the top floor. If I go a little further, I say that our behavior, the way we gather on, the way we worship, the way we conduct our churches are very similar to that of liberal Protestantism. In other words, we behave like Protestant churches in that we gather for Sunday services with a free Protestant order of service on Sunday mornings. We govern our churches the same way that Baptist, Methodist congregations govern their churches. As some of you know, I'm sort of getting away from elevator speech now, but as some of you know, I was raised a Baptist, and one of the things I did not have to relearn when I became a Unitarian Universalist was how to do church. Because what's, in fact, kind of intriguing is the way we operate here is very similar to the very almost evangelical Baptist church in which I was raised in southern West Virginia. For the reasons I just said, when we gather, we hold our services, the structure of our service follows the structure of the Baptist church in which I was raised. It's just the content is radically different. But the hymns, readings, sermons, prayers, or in our case, the silent meditation, all of the elements that were in the faith tradition in which I was raised are very much in Unitarian Universalism. This church governs itself exactly the same way as the near Southern Baptist church in which I was raised. We elect our officers, we have committees, have potluck dinners, Sunday school. We do all the things, and we operate in the very same way as the church in which I was raised. And so that again reflects our roots in Protestantism. We are, you know, we are not doctrinally Protestants in the sense of being, as I said earlier, definitively Christians, but we still, our behavior is very much in the Protestant tradition. The way we do church, the way we do religion, is very much in that Protestant tradition, which I think maybe gets me to another question here. Some of you churches appear to be more religious than others. I'm guessing that has to do with the minister and his or her personal beliefs. Does the congregation and or outgoing minister select an incoming minister with similar religious beliefs? Or is it the luck of the draw when it comes to who gets chosen? Well, this actually follows on. We choose our ministers here the same way that the churches I was just referring to choose their ministers as well. This church—it's been so long since you guys have had to call a ministry. You know, maybe you've, I'll tell you a little bit about how it's done. Hopefully, you won't need to know this for a few more years yet. But you know, the day will come when you'll have to when you'll need to do this. No, really, the way it generally works is that when it's time for a congregation, UU tradition to call a minister, one of the first things that it's done is a search committee is named. It's either chosen by the congregation, the board, however they want to do that. Now, Al McCartney was on the search committee that called me here. I'm trying to see if anybody else from there was. Not this morning. You call the search committee. A survey of the congregation is done. It's kind of get what its sort of its theological tone, what kind of minister it's looking for, lots of various kind of socioeconomic things. All of that goes into that mix. And then the Unitarian Universalist UUA, our denominational headquarters, sort of has a registry of ministers who are looking for to make a move. The idea is to kind of match up what the congregation is looking for with any number of ministers who fit that profile, and then the search committee goes through that, decides which ones they wish to interview. Out of that, they select one person whom they present to the congregation as the person they have chosen. And then the congregation has to take a vote, because it's the congregation as a whole that ultimately calls its minister. Yeah, so it's a two-way process. It's kind of like a courtship in a way. Each side, you know, just each of the congregation, the minister, prospective minister, deciding if they're right for one another or not, and going through all the kinds of things that bring you to that decision. And I would say, yeah, it's my experience in the, 19 years that I've, 18 and a half years now that I've been here, is that, you know, it's like the minister kind of shapes the tone and tenor of the congregation, but it's also a two-way street. The minister takes his or her signals from the congregation in terms of what their moods and needs and where they want to go are. And so it's kind of a back and forth sort of a thing. I'd say, you know, in those years that I've been here, my theology has changed and evolved somewhat. And I think that has probably had a shaping up. That's probably due to some parts of what's been happening with some of you people and how I've been challenged in some of my own beliefs and attitudes. And hopefully my own beliefs, attitudes, and ideas have an effect on the congregation as well. So it's kind of a back and forth, it's a back and forth sort of a thing. And I think it is, you know, when it comes time for a congregation to call a new minister, whether it's been a long or a short-term ministry preceding, that's a time for a congregation to really reevaluate itself. You know, okay, where are we? Who are we? Who do we now want to, what kind of traits and characteristics are we looking for in the person that we'll call to lead us from this day on? So it's a both and kind of thing. Both the minister and the congregation shape one another as they go through their shared lives. In the coming years, what do you expect to see from the religious right? That's probably with a couple of other questions in here. Religion has been a misguided excuse for many wars throughout history. Why have religious leaders thought they were more effective in preventing violence, upholding the common theme of all major religions? To what extent is Islam truly represented by terrorists? That's all part of sort of one bag, which I'll try to respond to. Religious right, it's a term that I've used myself quite often. What I'm coming to see is that it is not as monolithic a block as those of us who are religious liberals sometimes tend to see it. My sense is that there's a new sort of a new generation of leadership coming into the sort of evangelical right in this country by right now. I think that Falwell and Pat Robertson, even James Dobson, these guys are getting into their, excuse me, Jim, they're getting into their 70s at this point. And I think they still got their power, but I think their influence is beginning to wane, and there's another generation coming in, which doesn't quite want to be locked into some of this. I don't know if their opinions are that much different on things like, say, you know, same-sex marriage or some of the other issues that they sort of like to rally around, same-sex marriage, abortion, stem cell research. I think the opinions of the next generation of evangelical leaders is probably the same, but I'm getting a sense their emphasis is in a little different place. They're becoming more greener, more environmentally concerned. I'm finding, to my surprise and delight, that I actually agree with some of the environmental ecological stances that some of the people from the more conservative religious positions are taking right now. I think that they are beginning to say, look, if we're really going to call ourselves followers of Jesus, that does mean we need to be concerned about the plight of the poor and the hungry and the homeless and people needing health care. So I think there's more of, even though, like I said, they're not budging on some issues I wish they would budge on, I'm seeing more of an awareness of social ills on the part of persons on the right side of the religious spectrum and a willingness to attend to that. So I think my sense is that right now, as one generation kind of gives way to another, that the evangelical community is going through its own period of examination right now. And since I'm not a part of that conversation, but I'm quite interested in seeing where it plays out and where it's going to go. And the thing about, I've said this before, and other things about religion and wars. Sure, most of the wars that have fought over the course of human history, you can find some religious rationale behind them. If you look at some of the great peacemakers throughout history as well, they've been people who have been motivated by their religious faith and their religious tradition. My own take on that, strictly off the top of my head, is that whatever the roots are of causes people to contend with one another, deal violently with one another, as well as strive for ways of looking to live in a more peaceful way with one another, I think that's beyond religion. I think it's somewhere deeper in the human psyche and soul. And I think our religious faiths and our religious traditions play into either one side or the other of that. So I don't know that religion is the root cause. I think the root cause of wars, as well as the root reasons why people seek ways of living together, I think it's beyond religion. I think religion is used as a way of expressing some deeper currents in the human condition itself. That's about the best I can do on that. Islam, you know, the Islamic folks that I have gotten to know, I'll tell you, they strongly advocate peace, harmony, reconciliation. When I was at the peace rally up in Concord a few weeks ago, one of the speakers was a Dr. Salim, Islamic physician who I've gotten to know in various capacities. But he gave a very moving talk about the need for people of various religious traditions to come together to be advocates for world peace. There's no denying that there is, back to what I was saying earlier, there's a very violent and triumphalist side to the Islamic faith. There's no denying that. You know, I think if you examine things closely, you will find that in a number of religious traditions. You know, if you sort of back up and take the human perspective, there's probably been as many people killed in wars over the course of human history in the name of Christianity as there have been Islam. So this just goes back to what I was saying earlier. I think it's something deeper in the human condition that causes people to contend to be violent towards one another, and religion is kind of the rationale for that. What do I consider to be the source or sources of true happiness? Wow. consider myself, the various kind of setbacks and frustrations we all deal with, to be a reasonably pretty happy person, pretty content with my life. I would say that it involves, speaking for myself, it means finding things kind of beyond yourself that you feel passionate about and can commit yourself to and say, I want to make this happen. Then you find in turn that feeds yourself as well. So for me, for all the, as any minister would tell you, you're in the ministry and some kind of, say frustrations, setbacks, and things that drive you crazy from time to time come along. But beyond that is also the sense that I am part of something greater than myself. But I hope I am contributing to something, both in this congregation, with this faith tradition called Unitarian Universalism, beyond that with liberal religion. I hope I am contributing to something that's going to outlast and outlive me. I get a certain satisfaction and a certain sense of happiness from that. For me, as you probably know, I derive a good deal of happiness from literature, poetry, again, the arts, people who have written and sort of taken their vision and been able to convey it. That also speaks to me very deeply. As much as I find happiness in relationships and sharing my life with others, I think there's a certain amount of happiness and contentment to be found in just having a place for yourself that is strictly for you, that you can go to, both psychically and physically. I find I do need to do that from time to time. Just stuff that Steve knows and a place for Steve to be. So all those things have contributed to my happiness, feeling I'm a part of something greater than myself, cultivating some kind of an inner life that brings me some kind of peace and some kind of joy, and just enjoying the relationships that I have cultivated over the years. What do you feel seeing as to the service of the sermon? A lot. back to what I said earlier, I hope we make it a point to thank Sandra in a couple of weeks, and Jed, we're welcoming you here. Yeah, otherwise, if there's not, part of the tone behind my answer here is, it has to do with what a worship service is. I've got a whole stack of other stuff here. Maybe I'll try one or two more, and then I'm getting way too verbose here. But if it were if what we did was just come and listen to the minister speak on a Sunday morning, however interesting whatever I or anybody else in the pulpit might have to say, you basically become a lecture society at that point. And I guess as lecture societies goes, there's nothing wrong with that. And a lot that's good about it, but if you're going to be a worshiping community, there's got to be more than that. There's got to be some shared sense of participation. That's why I think, you may notice I shut this mic off whenever we sing because I don't want you to hear my voice. I enjoy singing with you. And I think also hearing music from the choir as well done as it is done here, it touches and it reaches people on a level that words, however eloquent or not they may be, really, really do not. And that's why I think you need the element of music in a service, both by the choir and people singing, because that's what actually makes us a gathered community, in addition to hearing whatever I or whoever else is up here may be singing. All right, I'm going to try one more here. We're getting close to 11 o'clock, and then I'm going to invite you to stay around. Grab you a cup of coffee, and then come back in here and help us hang some of these, put some of these banners up, and get the place looking, festive. Do liberal politics? I can't read. There's something about a theology in Unitarian Universalist congregations. This is a question I get asked in various respects. To what extent does liberal politics and liberal religion? Are they, are they the same? Well, not really. I'd say in most UU congregations, they certainly do overlap. But I think a distinction still needs to be drawn, because if you go back and look at our seven principles there, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, ending up with the respect for the interdependent web of existence of which we're all a part, goal of world community, peace, liberty, and justice for all. Those are the principles that we organize ourselves around. Now, those principles by themselves do not, as I see it, dictate a particular political strategy. They don't dictate a particular model of doing what we call justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Those are the goals. And I would say that there are any number of, just as we say there are any number of religious and spiritual paths to the truth, I would say there are any number of political paths one can walk to those particular goals, provided they're still working towards them. So while as a practice, if you were to survey most UU congregations, you'd find a high correlation between sort of moderate to left or center politics and the liberal religion that is there. You'll find that kind of a correlation. But I don't think, in fact, I don't think it's healthy for it to be a one-to-one ratio or a one-to-one. I don't think it's healthy for that to be an equivalent. I think we should be welcome to hearing any number of political strategies, ideas, and solutions to ways we can uphold our principles. One quick example of that, and I think we'll do it again. Speaking of singing, the first congregation that I served, the pillar of that church was a gentleman still living, quite elderly now. His name was Sam Collins. He was the sort of Mr. Republican for the state of Maine. He was the at the time I went there. He was in the state senate. He was their majority leader. Probably one of the more well-respected politicians in the state. His niece, Susan Collins, is now the senator from the senator of Maine. I met her. I married both of Sam's daughters, and so she came there, so I had a chance to meet her back before she really got into her political career. And Sam's one of those guys, kind of a classic Yankee Republican. He was sort of fiscally conservative, but moderate to liberal on social issues. And so he and I would have our differences in terms of maybe how certain money should be allocated for certain projects or causes. But I remember when I was there, a bill came up that would extend certain civil rights. This was in the early 80s now. Bill came up before the state legislature, a non-discrimination against on sexual orientation type of a bill, kind of a gay, lesbian, civil rights bill. I don't remember the particulars of it, but I remember talking with him about it, and he thought that supporting this was the right thing to do. And through his leadership, with the Republican-controlled Senate, through his leadership, he got the bill through the Senate. He took a lot of hits from the more right wing quarters of that party. But I really came to respect his integrity for that. And if I'd sort of taken the position that, well, because we disagree on issues A, B, and C, we've got nothing to talk about when it comes to something else, that would have been pretty foolish on my part. And I'm not saying that my conversation with him was what got the bill through the Senate, but being able to have that conversation with him was very good. I think Chuck Hotchkiss, who was the former lead organizer for the Grand State Organizing Project, he's gone on to teaching now. We've got a new leader coming on next month. He said something in one of our meetings that has kind of stuck with me when it comes to being politically astute, in which he said, how does it go? No permanent allies, no permanent adversaries. In other words, be aware of the kinds of issues and the things that you care about, and then look for people who you can make common cause with it. And because you can't get together on one issue, don't feel that other folks who disagree with you on one issue are people you can't approach for something else. I'm not making this too clear, but here's my example on this. As some of you know, when the amendment to ban same-sex marriage was up before the legislature, I was one of a number of folks, mostly religious leaders, who testified in opposition to it. And I remember we were there in the chamber, and somebody speaking in favor of the bill would come up, and then someone speaking in opposition would come up. And the woman who was speaking in favor of it came just, she was just before me. And she was a representative from the Manchester diocese. She was speaking on behalf of the diocese and speaking in opposition to the bill, or in support of the bill. My turn came next. I stated my opposition. Now I realized I had seen this lady before in other places. I'd seen her through through some Granite State Organizing Project things when we were advocating for things like affordable housing or affordable health care or some of these, or dealing with homelessness, some of these other kinds of issues. And I thought, well, this is just the way it works. Some days we're going to be on the same side of an issue, and we're going to be combining our voices and our energies to make that happen. And there are going to be other days when we cannot stand together, because you're coming from where you're coming from, and I'm coming from my place. And that's just the way it, that's the way it has to be. That's the way it has to be sometimes. So clear back to where I was beginning with this, I think we should keep ourselves open as we can across the political spectrum, because I think we all find common cause with folks who may be in a very different place than we are when it comes to particular kinds of issues. That may not be the most inspiring to end on, but it's already after 11 o'clock here. And I'm going to keep all the rest of these, and I will use some of these for sermon material. Jit, I think we're ready to close up here, and we're going to do in the order of service. We somehow inadvertently printed last Sunday's closing hymn. We began this service by, in a way, closing out the hall, singing about the harvest brought home. I think we're going to use this one, even with the nice weather we're having today, to anticipate the coming winter. So our closing hymn is number 57. It's all beautiful, the market days.